Hey, and welcome back to the A24 podcast. You might know actress Honor Swinton Byrne from her incredible performance in Joanna Hogg's The Souvenir, Parts 1 and 2. For today's episode, Honor called in from the remote Scottish Highlands for a long-distance conversation with a fan who was very excited to meet her. Paul Mescal also happens to be one of the most exciting young actors around, and he's starring in our upcoming film, God's Creatures. We hope you enjoy the episode. Listen to the very end for a surprise guest appearance.
I know, what a sentence. We're chatting on the A24 podcast. We've made it.
What did you ask, sorry?
Okay, will you allow me to like geek out for a little second? Because I only found this out the other day with The Souvenir that there was no, I don't like, I'm sure this is like not news to a lot of people, but it was news to me in that you didn't work from a kind of traditional script. And what that looked like, because it both gives me kind of like total fear and chills as a concept, because I'm scared of it, but also I think it's like true form acting that I'd just love you to talk a little bit about that and what that was like. And were you scared, or was it a form in which you really like to work?
Such a good question. It was, do you know, it was such a it was very frightening and very freeing at the same time. It was very kind of like, it was overwhelming, but also felt very natural. I would really like to work, preferably only like that in the future. It feels like such a kind of organic flow. Really interesting things happen, I think, when you're improvising as another person. That's interesting, because you're accepting all the stimuli you're getting visually and, or, you know, through you know, sound and everything, people speaking to you, people, you know, seeing people coming at you with knives, as there was in one scene that I didn't know was going to happen, that was cut.
Whoa.
This drug dealer came at me with a knife, and I was like, what the fuck? And then I had to, react as Julie, whereas Honor would kick the guy in the nuts. Julie would, like, be a bit of a victim.
Yeah.
So it's kind of...
And how do you, like, navigate, like how do you navigate the surprise? Like, I mean, like, when you're in character in a scene, like, do you find that the process has evolved to the point where Joanna, and through conversations with yourself and Joanna, that arrive on set within that kind of space, within Julie's world, but when something actually surprises you, do the lines blur at all? Like, do you find that there's, like, an amalgamation of Honor and Julia moments, or are you in a position that you know that character so well that it's just like two separate people? Do you know what I'm trying to say? Like,
where do the
lines blur in that? Yeah.
No, and you're saying it so well, because I've tried to explain this to people and I haven't explained it as well as you just did there, the kind of the lines blur. Absolutely, the lines blur. They really do, you know. I didn't think they would, and I think over time they did more, because she was like my alter ego by the end of it. And then, as you'll maybe see in part two, we, Julie and Honor, get very, very close in personality and sort of tendencies like that. It's really interesting. So we start off the first Souvenir as someone who's very different to me, but somebody who I once was, very interestingly enough. And then at the end of the second one, it's kind of Honor. So this kind of morphing situation happens. And it's interesting, because when speaking with Joanna about
feels super
it,
meta,
exactly,
right?
It's amazing. Like, and I feel like Joanna said, she sort of, I mean, I don't want to put words in her mouth, but I understood from her that she didn't have a sort of very precise, clear sort of climax of the second one. She wanted to see where I took it with her guidance. And it just took such a cool kind of unpredictable, turn to it. But yeah, absolutely. The characters really meshed.
No, so
they really kind of merged, in good ways and bad. I feel like a lot of the time I would react in scenes very, you know, quite kind of ballsy and aggressive and certain of myself. And Joanna would say, cut, no, Honor, like, just remember that you haven't quite got the balls yet. You're not quite there yet. You're still grieving and you're in this really weird, very emotionally abusive relationship. So just dial it back.
Yeah.
So it would take a few goes sometimes.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Like the scenes with yourself, like, I love it. Like the scenes with yourself and Tom and like your mother, like incredible. But that kind of, that, I feel like the form, like the shooting for, like the, just the format of like not having a script, like essentially to me watching that film is about manipulation and gaslighting, which is kind of weirdly ingrained in the shooting process in a safer way, you know, like it's like you're being drip fed this information as the character is, and not to like explain what it was for you, but from an audience's perspective, I feel like having now learned about that that's the way that you shot it, it makes total sense. It's like you are in a similar emotional and mental state as the character, and that's where it like really helps to blur the lines, I feel like, from a process point of view, right?
That's bang on. And it's such a good way, it's such a good way to work when you're particularly doing all this very, it's all improvised, obviously. It's all, you know, there's mm-hmm. literally, I'm not given any lines. And I think, yeah, Joanna just sort of was the puppet master in just such a genius way.
Yeah,
she just
amazing.
Completely, so like safe, gentle, as you say, like so secure. Mm-hmm. And I trusted her to the ends of the earth.
Yeah.
But it really was this very consensual, very interesting, that very different to the plot line, but very consensual sort of naivety that I just surrendered to.
Yeah.
And interestingly enough, Tom had read there wasn't a script, but there was a manuscript, I think Joanna calls it,
right.
which was just like pages of prose and descriptions of scenes. And no lines or anything, but he had read that. I've never seen it still to this day. I have no idea what Joanna like envisioned before we shot it. It's quite nice to not see it because then I can't compare it to what it could have been or anything. It's sort of quite, it's just organic. I keep coming back to this word.
Yeah.
Like it's just very, it just happened in a really beautiful, natural way. And I mean, I met Tom for the first time in the scene when I actually meet him on camera, like,
oh, incredible.
It was so weird. So the scene in the bit in the thing in the first film where I meet him is I didn't know what act, I didn't know
this.
The actor.
Did you know who?
I had
Jesus,
no idea. I had no
incredible.
Idea what he was gonna
like,
look like.
That just doesn't happen anymore. Like that kind of, like that's such an experience.
Yeah. It's so cool.
That's such an experience. And it's for like, what I love about that is that that's just for you. Like the audience doesn't know. But this is the first time that the two actors have met. Like, that's so... It's like, I love when directors make it, like... When they make it harder to pretend... Like, because I think it's all, like, to a certain extent about pretending. But when they make it that bit easier to not pretend. Like, when it's, like, they put things in... they put structures or, like, scenarios in place where it, like, gets the little, like, child in your mind excited about the fact that this is... This version of, like, your imagination is actually... closer to the truth than like the do you know what I'm trying to say?
I know exactly.
Yeah, when it's like being held up as like a fat like when you're acting in a scene and it's almost like a fantasy of your imagination because it's you're in an or in, like you're in a period of history meeting somebody for the first time and you're actually meeting them for the first time. That's like not a fully articulated thought, but I just got excited about being in your shoes in that position and be like, this is like my kryptonite story.
Well, I hope you... No, honestly, I can't wait. I feel like you'll one day have an experience similar because it's fucking like... It's so amazing and it's so interesting because I can't take credit for how believable it seems because it's real. So it's almost like...
No, but of course you can, right? Like in the sense that like it doesn't matter if it's real or not. You've still got to... do and you do it so brilliantly, like you've still got to like I feel like there's weirdly more pressure on you given the fact that you like know that all of this has been put in place to support you, that you then have to be totally present and like allow it to kind of flourish and be the moment that Joanna is hoping it will be and it totally is in the film. And like
she just designed it in such a, it really was like a dance. It was so it was so choreographed, and I only ever realized now actually how, I don't want to say controlled, I don't want to use that word, but how kind of structured it actually kind of was.
Mm-hmm.
Because to me, because I was the only one on set who didn't get call sheets, who had no idea what scenes we were doing, I was the only one. And so I was so out of my depth. I was like floundering, in a good way. I enjoyed floundering.
Yeah.
But everyone else was completely aware of how the scene was going to start and how the scene was going to end. And whatever happened down that path, whatever journey we took in the sort of sandwich filling of that was, up for the sort of interpretation of the actors.
And so just like for a nerdy question in terms of like how you went about shooting that, like, so I can't imagine there was a huge amount of rehearsal, but in the sense that like in terms of coverage, like if they're looking to keep you, the actor, and Julie in the dark, did they shoot your coverage first, or did they shoot Masters first, or how did that work in terms of like a filmmaking process side of things? Like, how was that style protected?
Well, there was no rehearsals at all, so we would often shoot each scene twice and move on. There's like massive bits of the film that were cut out because we shot, I think in total, I think each film took about 2 months to shoot. Really short, like really, really quick. Mm-hmm. And what often happened is Joanna, she would shoot for 20 minutes. Like she'd do a 20 minute take and then kind of take the wee
on film, right? On 16 mil.
On film.
How long could that run for?
I think
sorry, these are all super nerdy questions, but like, so the mag can take 20 minutes.
I should know this. Like I kind of, I should know this, but I think it is about 20 minutes. I think
that's crazy.
But I do remember they were like, but it was amazing. We would just kind of run and then Joanna, it was just amazing to witness like these people that just knew so much about film and they were like proper nerdy. Like these had been their lives. Like they'd gone to film school and they'd like made these student films that no one really wanted to work on and they'd failed and they'd been kind of, it's so amazing. And so I was like, it was incredible to pretend to be at film school when I kind of like, when all these people had actually witnessed it and kind of, being in that position before.
And also just the fact that like film is making a comeback in terms of like, I don't know if you feel this, but it's so, I think it changes everything when you're like, it's really like coming back, like the fact that people just want to shoot on 30. I know you guys shot on 16, but like 35's coming back, like as in the next thing I'm doing is on 35 and the last two things have been on 35, and it's just such a, it's like something that like you listen to older actors talk about in the sense that like they ask if you've shot on film or things like this, and it's really, I don't even know what my point is, I'm just kind of excited that it's coming back and that we get to do it, and that it does feel like kind of when you hear about musicians like recording on tape rather than digitally, it feels like that it's richer or something.
Exactly.
And it makes everything less kind of like disposable. I think it makes like performance and choice, like it's not just like run through it and we'll try it tons of times, and I think it requires a kind of attention and focus and kind of discipline, which I find like hugely important, and zero point to be made there other than I was like, yay, it's coming back, and like to get to like act for a full like mag on film and Joanna's not calling cut is like so thrilling to hear, but
it's amazing.
Yeah,
and it was so, it's like, it's very sensual to me, the fact that like it was so precious, like transporting the film afterwards was like such a massive parade.
Oh God.
Whether there was going to be a hair in the gate and the whole thing was going to be gone. Like it was just, and so there's something so, you can almost taste like when you're watching like the graininess, the like, the, exactly what you said.
It's so nice.
It's so personal. There's something so like raw about it that, digital is not quite, it's not the same thing. But anyway, enough about me. please tell me what it was like. Where did you shoot Normal People?
We shot it like mostly in Dublin and Sligo and Italy. And like I was telling you before, I saw your film when I was shooting Normal People with Daisy. We went to the cinema. We were like, it was like a long week and we were like, hey, let's just go see this. And so, it's I feel like weirdly linked in that sense. But we shot it the summer of, I think, 2019. And it's kind of crazy that it's still, to a certain extent, people talk about it, which is really exciting. And
of course, my God, it's literally, it's all my friends talk about. It's just, and they don't talk about it enough. Like, it's just, I can't get enough. Yeah. But I've never met Daisy, so we share the same agency. And I've never met her.
Oh, fun.
But I've heard, like, just such wonderful like things about her.
The best. Oh, yeah, like, I feel like she's just one of, like, genuinely one of a kind. I was talking to her the other day, and it's a weird thing now. Like, we were talking about, like, having spent so much time with each other that summer, and then COVID happens, and we spend so much time on Zooms with each other talking about the thing, and then suddenly the world opens up, and we're so lucky that that show has, like, then allowed us to work in, like, different corners of the world on projects that we're really excited about. But we essentially really haven't really hung out and kind of like decompressed together about like what that shooting experience was. So we're like trying to plan around Christmas when we can hang out and see each other. So it's But I feel like we've grown, like, for both of us, we talk about the fact that, like, so much has happened in 2 years that feels like 6 months, but there's no real point there, but it's just been, a lot has happened to us, and like, we just, yeah.
That's how I feel as well. It's just flown by, but just so much has been condensed. I mean, mm-hmm. I've been at uni online, which is so shit. It doesn't feel like I've been studying.
Yeah, my brother's the same. He's like sick of it. Yeah.
How old is your brother?
My brother is 20. Oh, Jesus. He's 22. He's 22. He's 22. I'm sorry, Donica. No, he's 22.
What does he study?
He is studying HR management, and he's like, my sister's a musician, she's an amazing singer, and my brother is like the person that you turn to in a moment of crisis, is so chill and kind in a way that is like so disarming. Like, he plays rugby and like he's big, strong boy, but he's like, collectively as a family, we turn to Donica for like a kind of level-headed voice. So HR feels like a, he's whatever he does, he's just like, he'll be public facing people person.
I get such a kick out of
Donic's getting a shout out on the A24 podcast.
Yes, we're all here to talk about him. That's like, yeah. I love hearing people talk about their siblings, like when they really, really love them. I just get I don't know what it is. It's like different to talk about friends or parents.
But I feel like if I really hated him, like imagine I really hated him, I feel like I would perform loving him on the A24 podcast, you know?
Well, yeah, exactly. Like,
actually,
I'm going to perform in a minute that I actually like my brother.
But, oh, he's probably... Yeah.
Yeah. I hate him. I'm going to say... No, I can't even perform. Okay. I absolutely hate him.
Great.
He's going to... He won't even listen to this. I can't even pretend. He won't even say whatever he wants. Because
you hate each other.
Because hate each other. We're twins. I hate each other. Anyway, enough airtime about him. Enough.
I love it.
So your sister, she's...
But how did you get started in all this? How did you, what, like, in the world of acting and, how did it all start for you?
Do you know what? I wish I could tell you. I don't, I never planned it. I remember Joanna cast me, 2 weeks before we started shooting the first souvenir, 10 days maybe. And
whoa.
I just left school. Whoa. I was
sorry.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
So 10 days before, and then you find out you're going to not get a script and
cut my hair.
You don't know who you're going to be acting with. Yeah. Go cut your hair.
I remember they cut my hair with kitchen scissors.
Yeah. Wow. That's
in
incredible.
In the bathroom. It was really incredible. It was so weird at the time. It was such an adrenaline high. I was brilliant, fantastic. I'm just left school, and I was a florist assistant at the time. So I was going to weddings and carrying buckets of shit everywhere for months. And then Joanna came to stay to talk to my mum about the souvenir, because my mum was always connected to it. And I'd heard about it. I'd heard my mum sort of speak about this amazing film Joanna was going to make about her younger years and being a film student in the 80s. Wow. And I was oh, that's so cool. Fantastic. I was oh, you're going to be the mum. That's amazing. Never even entered my brain that it would be that I would be involved in any way. I was maybe I'll be an extra.
Your mother would be playing your mother. That's when you actually unpack it, there's so much going on. It's just incredible.
And my dogs are in it. They're my dogs as well. And all that I wear a lot of my mum's clothes in the second one, all of the stuffed toys and all the pillows and all the decorations in the first one are mine, from my bedroom. Mm-hmm. It's weird. It's so meta. It's just amazing. Everything was... Yeah, it was amazing. So, yeah, she came to stay. And I remember I came back from seeing a pal or something. I think we met in a train station. We met in Berwick-upon-Tweed station. And I was coming back from Edinburgh. And she was going to London. And we met on the platform. And it was really rainy. And we went and sat in a cafe near her, because I remember we walked away without paying by accident. And we sat there for 4, maybe 3 hours. And she asked me, I had no idea she was, observing me or sort of interviewing me, casting me. But she was just asking questions about ex-boyfriends and weird sort of gaslighting experiences that I'd, had, I think quite recently at that point. And I was just talking really freely. And I remember, I look back now seeing it slightly differently. And she, she was just looking at me and she was like, God, that's so interesting. Fantastic.
Yeah, okay, she was just like putting you in the film as you were speaking.
Yeah, she was like,
that's
really
crazy.
Like analysing me. And then we got home and she was like, so do you want to be in the film? And I was like, yeah. And she was
that day,
we sat at the kitchen table and she was like, look, I'm making this film. Do you kind of want to be in it? And I was like, yeah, sure. And she was like, I don't need an answer now. Have a wee think about it and get back to me because it's a big commitment. You know, we're going to do 2 films and it will be over like 4 years. And it's like very low budget and very kind of like, you wouldn't know about the, you wouldn't read the script or you wouldn't really know the story. And I was like, let's do it. She was like, I don't think you're quite understanding like what I'm presenting to you. And I was like, no, let's do it. And we did it like 10 days later. And it was like, the best decision I ever made.
Amazing.
It was super cool.
That's incredible.
Are you allowed to talk about...
That's like... So like
the things that you've just done. About the projects you just worked
on. I think I can talk...
Or are they top secret?
Yeah, I'm like... Well, one of the films is an A24 film that has been like announced. So I can talk... I can't wait. It's a film called... God's Creatures. We shot it in Ireland. Emily Watson plays my mum and I love her deeply.
She's Scottish.
And I'm just excited for the film in the context of like what it's dark, it's incredibly well written, and I'm really excited to see what the kind of film going audience's response is to it. And it was directed by Anna and Celia. It's an Irish film directed by 2 women who live in New York, which I'm super excited about, from an Irish creative standpoint, that it's not like, I feel like the gatekeeping of our own cultures has kind of got to change a little bit in terms of like, let's get like brilliant directors in to examine us culturally and let's start the discussion from there. Which I like in terms of like narrative stuff, I can't really talk about it, but I'm just really excited for it to come out. I don't know, like it'll be next year at some point, but
We're A24 family.
I'm excited.
We're family.
We're A24 family, exactly.
They're very good to us.
That was always like one of my like kind of, they're very good to us. I remember like, being in drama school being like, God, I'd love to be in it. Yeah, it's like the opposite of talking about our brothers that we hate. We actually love.
We really do. For legal reasons, we have to say that really we do.
Exactly. Exactly.
So where in Ireland is home for you?
So my family are from a place called Maynooth, like an hour away from Dublin. It's kind of like that. So like that's probably technically home, and like I'm going home for Christmas, which is going to be exciting. But home is kind of like at the moment, it's kind of all over the place. Like I don't live there. I was living in London last year, and then with work I'm kind of like the cliche thing of like living out of a suitcase, which is wonderful but also kind of like at moments like anxiety inciting. I'm like, if shit hit the fan, I love my family very much, but I don't necessarily want to go back to my like own bedroom. So I'm kind of in the process now of kind of figuring out where I want to be in the world, which I always thought would just be like an easy, which is naive. I was like, yeah, I'll probably like live in London for a couple of years and come back home. And I'm definitely now in flux in terms of just that figuring out exactly where I want to be. But what about you? It's home. Home is, you're in uni in Edinburgh, right?
Home is kind of Edinburgh.
Or London.
Whisper that. Edinburgh. It's Scotland. It's just Scotland.
Edinburgh.
Yeah. But you know, I'm in the same kind of weird, I mean, not exactly the same, I'm not traveling as much, but I just turned 24, so we're the same age, and it's a weird stage, because you're not that young anymore.
It just kind of creeps up on you to make life decisions.
Exactly, you're not actually that young anymore, and I'm like, oh, I'm young, I can do whatever I want, and then it's like, no, I'm in my mid-20s, like, no, I actually can't, but then you're not remotely old.
I'm like slowly developing a bad back.
It's like, you know, you're getting old when you like make a noise when you stand up. You're like, And now I'm like, ooh, it's getting cold, my joints. I was like, what's wrong with me? Like, I'm being possessed by this old, like, woman or man, really. And it's just weird. Like, it's weird being this age. And also just working out where you kind of belong and where you want your place to be. Not your families, not your partners, not your pals. Like, where your kind of nest should be. But,
yeah, and I think it's about, like, being patient with ourselves to a certain extent, just because what I've learned over the last 2 years is that, like, displacement is kind of part and parcel of it all, and kind of, it's kind of a contradiction. It's like, I hate it, but I've kind of got to be at peace with it, in the sense that, like, you go on to these sets and you go into rehearsal rooms, and by its innate nature, these people become your, like, family, or they're the closest people to you for an extended period of time, and then you go away and you go to a new home somewhere else, and I think it is about, I don't know, being patient with ourselves in our mid-20s, and like, not every decision, or like, I find, like, listening back to, like, interviews that I said when, like, normal people was coming out or things, it's like, nothing we say now is actually or has to be binary. The one thing that have to be binary is, like, our outlook on the world as human beings. You know, it's like, what are your core values? The rest can fucking move and change as much as it wants. And I think it should. I think that's what we're both trying to say. Or that's what I'm trying to say. It's like, I'm figuring myself out, and I'm, like, going to try and start enjoying that process rather than being scared of it, I think.
And there's a soundbite right there. Do you know what? This is what I was thinking. Is that when I was earlier, when I was talking earlier about why normal people, why I felt so comforted by it. And when I said that, I was like, that's so strange. Like, I haven't said that out loud. But that's, like, really from my gut. That's what I feel about it. And I was trying to kind of, like, as we've been talking, I'm like, what do I mean by that? And I think you just hit the nail on the head saying that we're just being patient with ourselves. And I think that's what normal people was to me. A lot is about people fucking up and people learning from things and people just, and I take such comfort in cinema and TV and things like portraying people being people and not being like these gods or these like dream people that like never fuck up or never make mistakes or never like learn from their mistakes or be young and reckless and learning. And I think I felt so comforted. I was like, yes, thank you, someone else, like, showing me that it's okay to just do what I want for a second and then slightly regret it afterwards, but not really, actually, because I learned from it.
Totally.
I don't know, and I think,
I feel like what's different is, like, in a way that is, like, both positive and negative, is, like, we're in a position now where essentially we're having a chat and we are talking about, like, our opinions on things now what date is it? It's like 19th of November. These are our opinions now as like a 24 and a 25 year old. But it's for like, to a certain extent, this is for like public consumption. And I suppose it's like, how do you feel about like access? Like, because I think I love that I get to talk to another like-minded creative person, but there's also like the part of panic in my like, the ugly part of my brain that's like, think about what you're saying, like a normal fucking human being. But I always kind of like protecting yourself. Like, basically, it's a question. How do you feel about like access to yourself and your thoughts and your opinions? Where do you feel those lines blur, and what makes you anxious in that regard? It's basically like public facing and whatnot.
Do you know what? I think I don't see enough people speaking their mind, and it annoys me a wee bit, because I'm like, please just say what you think. Just have unpopular opinions. And this is what I'm loving about this conversation, is because I can really, it's so open what's going on here. And I think, but to answer your question, it's so funny. I feel lots of different things, is that I always have this anxiety in these interviews. I remember I said something really awful. I'm trying to remember what it was to an interviewer. And I could just see him scribbling it down. I was like, oh, no, don't, I didn't mean it that way. I didn't mean to insult that person that way. I was like, oh, shit, no, I do think the Oscars is great. Brilliant, it's fantastic. Or something like that. Yeah. And then I was like, actually, no, put that in, because that's what I feel. And I might feel differently in a week, but put that down because I feel, you know, that's how I feel.
Yeah.
And I really shouldn't apologise for that. And I just think it's, I don't know, it switches me on
no, definitely
people say
not.
What they feel. But there always is that little, like, ugly part of your brain. It's such a good way to put it. That little voice being like, oh, be careful, like, you're going to insult someone. Like, not
be
everyone's
careful.
Gonna, like,
yeah.
Be
people
so
are
careful,
gonna,
like,
use this as their soundbite for you.
Exactly, and this is gonna be a headline somewhere.
And also, it doesn't like, I'm saying this as somebody who actually deeply cares about, like, if I'm being honest, I deeply care what people think of me. And, like, part of that is, like, a problem, and part of that is just innately who I am. I want people to, definitely from a working standpoint, it's like I always want, like, success. I remember writing down a, like, note in my, like, at the end of drama school, it's like, what does success look like to you? And I remember thinking, like, success to me is, like, not be, like, you can't be to everyone's taste, like, creatively, but I would love people to, like, conclusively assume that, like, oh, whether he's your taste or not, he's a good actor and he's good at what he does. Like, that to me is what success looks like. But also it's an unhealthy kind of mindset, you know. It's like, you can't, I'm definitely people pleasing. I think that was, like, I came off social media last year in an attempt to kind of put a bit of control around that and be like, I have this innately in me, but I don't need to, like, see what people think of me all the fucking time. And it's totally ego driven, and it's like, but also I think it's an important part of being an actor. Or maybe you might disagree, but I don't feel like we're doing it for ourselves. Part of us is doing it because we love doing it, but we're making things for people to see and view and talk about. And with that comes a kind of dissection of you as a person and as an actor. And it's like, where those two things line up is where I, like, that is the center point of my anxiety, you know, where those two things merge. Like, that's it. Like, that is, that's where, that is the ugly part of my brain that I'm describing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I completely agree with you. I agree that, like, acting, it's not for yourself. It shouldn't be. I think it is for many people, but it's really, it's not for me. It's not for you. And I think it's very giving. It's very kind of, well, that's my intention anyway with it, is it really is for other people. It's for the entertainment. It's a beautiful thing to move people and to make people feel comforted in lockdown, you know?
Comfort them with traumatizing
exactly
television.
Traumatize,
like, that's what
them, exactly. Make them glad that they're, like, stuck in COVID, you know? But no, I completely agree with you. And I think that's a beautiful mentality. But do you know what? I fucking hate social media. As someone who's on social media.
I definitely don't believe it's like,
I think it's just ego driven. It's all for yourself because you're getting these likes.
No, but it's like,
approval,
I feel like
approval.
Some people are able to navigate it so well, right? Like, some people are able to, like,
I'm not one of those people. I feel like
have that part of their, I know, I just get fucking scared of it. I'm just like, okay, well, this one person thinks this of me, therefore that person is a representative of like 90% of the population, therefore I am hated.
Yeah.
And it's like, I know it's when you, like, boil it down, that's not true, but it's I feel like, to me, the loudest voice in the room is often the most negative, and it definitely doesn't help my work or my life or, like, trying to adjust to a new version of reality, which I love, by the way. It's like, I love that this is what our lives get to be now. We get to, like, make films and talk to other creative people and, like, be in parts of the world that I never would be without the job that we get to do. So it's like, how do I make my dream a more, like, comfortable reality, I think is what the last year has been. It's like, how do I actually enjoy this thing happening to me? And if it's like, take myself away from the world a little bit, I feel like that's where I'm kind of settling on at the moment. I think
this is my push to not do it anymore, because I do feel like, as you say, there is just so many more negatives than positives. It's just not, yeah, the loudest voice in the room is the most negative.
Yeah.
I feel like I just keep checking it as well. I sort of, like, wake up from this daydream where I'm just, like, scrolling through all these people I don't know and I don't care about. And it's just wasting my energy and my time. And I think it's time.
Yeah.
But, my mum bought me a book called The Courage to be Disliked. And I haven't read it yet. And I think I need to.
The Courage to be Disliked.
The Courage
Great
to be Disliked.
For something.
And I think I should read it. Because I need more of that courage.
Do you do you think you have that? Do you think you have the, like, as it stands now, how do you feel about people?
I'm so much better than I was. I really, and I think with that comes this relaxation to, I mean, say all these things that I said on this chat, like, that are probably going to offend a load of people. It's so freeing. I kind of like.
Definitely have not.
Honestly, well, I mean, we'll see.
It's hilarious that we think we've been like, we think that we've been like so hateful bad. On this, and we basically just talked about our own anxieties. Like we have, if people are offended by this conversation, I feel like fuck them.
I know. I'm being so bad.
That should be.
I'm being so controversial. I'm just like, yeah, like I have anxiety about social media. It's just like me and everybody else.
But
I need to read that book. I think I need more of it. I don't think you can have enough courage to be disliked. My lordy, it's so nice to meet someone so like-minded. It's really nice. It doesn't happen a lot to me. It doesn't happen a lot.
Really?
Yeah, genuinely, because I feel like
So you're still in college, right? That's crazy. You're doing a press tour for what I have no doubt is going to be an incredible film, and you're in college. That's so cool.
Thank you. It's cool. It's hard because I'm realizing I'm not super. Yeah. And I know people say this all the time. They're like, not very smart, and I'm like, it's like false modesty. I really mean it. I'm not academic whatsoever. I'm doing psychology, and it's just all statistics. And I'm just realizing now. I just wrote an essay on the difference between emotional intelligence and academic cognitive processes and stuff. And
say that again. Academic intelligence.
So the difference between emotional intelligence and cognitive, academic, like good at exams, good at sort of. Regurgitating information, basically.
Retaining information.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And I'm absolutely terrible at exams and retaining information and remembering what people say in lectures and remembering how to do maths. I can't do it. And I just think, for me personally, I'd rather be so much more emotionally intelligent because I think it gets you...
Well, I feel like it's way more useful for the job that you're so wonderful at, you know? Who cares if you can't do like your 56 times tables? You're gonna have to like blow smoke up your ass for a second. It's like you can't do what you did in The Souvenir through like anything other than like emotional intelligence, because yes, you're being put in kind of like organic situations to kind of help with the filming process, but you've also got to kind of be a dramaturg in your own head while you're filming, which I think is so impressive. Like, I didn't have to do that on normal people. I got to work with, like, the most incredible scripts that do a lot of the... I suppose it's just, like, you carry a different weight of the film in different places. And I definitely didn't have to be a dramaturg in terms of any of those shooting processes. I got to just, like, invest in the writing and show up and try and achieve as much as I could... or bring what I thought was required to the scenes. Whereas you're just having the scene happen to you in real time, which is, like, thrilling and... I'm so glad that I got to talk to you a little bit about that.
But I'm so interested in trying this. Like, I've never worked in any other setting than the improvisational sort of, like, instant way. And I'd be so interested to work with an amazing script written by an amazing writer with words that aren't mine. Yeah. Like, that's, to me, is really moving. I think I really like to represent someone's character, something from their mind, and sort of, represent. I think that's really beautiful. And was there room for improvisation or, like... You're bringing your own kind of... of course there was, but I mean, like, was there... Yeah, room for kind of moulding in your projects?
I wish I could talk...
I know you can't talk
about this one, but there's one where... No, but there's one I think is fair to say that, like, it gives nothing away and nothing's been announced, but where I spend essentially the whole film with a child, and I'm just trying to police what I can say, and that's... That was so exciting because process kind of goes out the window. You're just kind of shooting with child hours. And there's something thrilling about that because it does feel improvised and you're just kind of rolling with whatever you're getting. And that was so thrilling and a process that I really enjoyed. And it felt super alive and wasn't kind of a lot of like deliberating or talking about the scene. It was kind of like, let's just go in and start it and see where we end up. And I really enjoyed that. I think that's what I'm looking for a little bit now, is like not only like plethora of different colors for different characters, it's more so now like I'm looking at kind of the process of how directors want to work and seeing if that's something that I would enjoy. Basically, I think what we've described is that we're just trying to figure out our lives and what we want from like the acting that we want to do, which is like exciting, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
Absolutely.
100%. I just feel like I'm so excited about meeting more collaborations because I think that's a beautiful word.
Yeah, yeah.
It means like equality in terms of the actor and the director mm-hmm. and the writer and the producer, all these teamwork, rather than many mm-hmm. experiences I've heard about is you just are a puppet. And I think...
Stand there, say it like this, say it faster, say it slower.
Exactly. Like, and then it might as well be anyone.
Who was it that told me a story the other day? It was like an experienced actor was on set, or I can't remember what, like, but a director went like, okay, you're going to stand over here. And before he'd even finished the sentence, the actor was like, oh, well, this is going to be fucking shit. You know, like, I can't wait to be ballsy enough to get past the point of like, hearing a director say that maybe at some point and trying to nurse them out of that decision, like, you know, like trying to nurse them into a conversation about collaborating. Like, I weirdly can't wait to get to the point where I'm like, not in a dickhead way, but just like, oh no, this is not fun, this is not filmmaking, this is not acting, and like to just not care.
I want to get there. Like,
care so deeply that I don't care.
It's like,
yeah. Yeah.
But do you know what? The next time, hopefully, yeah. I can't wait for us to meet in person, because maybe we'll meet and be like, I did it. I like spoke up and I like said that
please.
I didn't want
to
do
let's
it.
Let's hold each other to that.
I mean it. Let's do it together. Let's go on this journey together. I think we can.
Because
I think, well, you're going to hit it before I do. But I'll read that book and then it will maybe get me a head start. That The Power to Be Disliked book.
I'm definitely going to read that book.
I'll send you a copy
let's
both read it.
Let's endeavor to make everybody... Let's endeavor. Let's make a promise here to endeavor to make everybody hate us in a like really passionate way.
I'll win. I think I'll get there.
Yeah.
You're safe. I'm like, I think you'll fail, Paul. I'm not sure, like... No one's ever going to dislike you, ever.
I think you might underestimate me. I think you might be underestimating me.
Maybe I do.
But,
We'll see.
Yeah.
Oh, my Lord.
Anna, it was so lovely chatting to you.
I've
really enjoyed this.
Please let it be the first of many. I really mean that. Please. I'd love to get your contact. Let's
chat.
No,
for sure.
Let's do it. Because I think we've got a lot more to talk about.
For sure.
I mean it. Thank you so much. And... If you got a second,
my
mum wants to meet you. Can she meet you
really
fast?
Oh my God, yes.
Can
Are
she?
You joking?
Mama!
Please, I get to meet
you. But she's like,
Swindon
immediately,
right
she's like under the sofa. One second.
Ooh, I'm nervous.
Are you coming in?
Is it time for the fish
one
pie?
Second. It's time for you to meet. Oh my God.
Hello!
This is crazy!
This
is
crazy! Huge fan, I'm freaking out.
So now you're here in our house, and the fish pie is nearly ready.
I wish we could...
I wish
like
you could come and have some.
Onto the...
Just describe the, like, family meeting of, like, your meeting...
Yes, well...
Her boyfriend for the first time.
Yes.
And then she ran on
He's next door. Should we bring him in?
Bring him in!
I'm going to bring him in,
Bring him in. Bring everybody in.
You're summoned now.
Rosie, come in. Come. Do you have any pets?
Well, this is... I have two dogs. My dog Jack is going blind, though.
Oh, but Rosie's
going
deaf.
Yeah, it's drunk.
Rosie's gone deaf.
Is the lightning okay for you?
This come is in. The lightning's all good.
Come in.
Hello.
This is
Hello.
Ben.
Hi, Paul.
Hey, what's going
on? How are you?
Fellow Irishman.
Yes. I've spent many a night in the rooster.
No, you haven't.
Yeah, I have. Did you bring it up? No?
No, I didn't. I was waiting for you to bring it up.
It's Christmas.
Yeah, a couple nights in the rooster anyway. And you used to play... Did you used to play with... You used to play with Con Kavanagh?
Oh, Con Kavanagh, yeah. I used to play county with Con
Kavanagh. Yeah, so I know Con from...
He's a legend.
Yeah, I used to play football with him.
This is bizarre. Like, we start talking about acting and we end up at the roost.
The roost and football.
And I just meant Tilda Swinton as well. Like,
the most
I think you should have insisted on coming here in person and having some fish pie myself.
I know,
I should have.
Where are you,
next
Paul?
I'm in San Francisco. Close to San Francisco. I actually have to run and drive my... partner band to a show. I'm on chauffeur duty. So that's what's next on the cards for me.
Very good.
But if I'm gonna be actually in London next week for like 10 days if you guys are like...
Well, funnily enough, we are coming down, aren't we? Okay.
Let's actually do one of the things where I'll get like, can I get your number on her?
Yes, please.
Thanks for listening. The A24 podcast is produced by us, A24. Special thanks to our editor, Tom Wyatt, and Robot Repair, who composed our theme.